another low point for UNLV football. Rebels 14, Lobos 50. An absolutely ugly display Saturday at Sam Boyd Stadium. Rebel Room, I'm Case Kiefer with Ray Brewer and Mike Romala. Mike, you were there. Was it as bad as it looks?
It was...
Don't overreact, Romala. Go ahead.
No, it's no. I never do. I'll take the measured approach. It was really bad. I know we talked last week about how confident are you in UNLV winning this game, and I don't think any of us were 100% confident. There was always...
I think one of us was 99.8.
That's true. I think we managed to get that window ajar by the end of the show.
Yeah,
like, didn't we get it to talk you? Didn't we talk him into it that maybe...
No. Before we even were on, Rodgers was the quarterback.
That's true.
Timeout, though. All week, people are telling... Multiple people told me they're better off with Max Gilliam. The line only moved 2 points.
Well, clearly all those people were wrong.
I knew you were going to use this as an excuse.
Max Gilliam was awful.
Yeah, 50-14? Your whole team was not prepared if you lose by 36 points to New Mexico. No excuses. This was the worst loss I have ever seen. We're in the... This is what Tony Sanchez has been building towards, and you lose by 36 in a game where you're a 9.5-point favorite. Stop the excuses. Let's figure out how UNLV fix this. No more excuses. I don't care if it was your third-string quarterback. You don't lose by 36 to New Mexico.
Second-string quarterback.
I said I don't care if it's your third-string.
Oh. Listen, I'm not making excuses. Case, why are you interrupting Romala? He was in the middle of trying to explain to us why it was
all right,
so crappy.
Back to that.
Let Romala speak. He was the only one of us that was at the game.
I said, all I was going to say was that the window was always open for UNLV to lose this game. I just, no one expected them to lose like that to get dominant. I think that was, in 4 years, probably the worst that the team has played under Sanchez. They probably played worse on Saturday than they did against Howard. If they had played like that against Howard, they wouldn't have lost by 3. They would have lost by 20. So that was the worst single performance that we've seen from the team in Tony Sanchez's time. Some of that goes to the quarterback situation, but there were so many other things that they did really, really badly that had nothing to do with quarterback play, and that's the stuff that just makes you shake your head and you don't understand like how it could still be this way. You know, 4 years into the coaching tenure, 5 games into the season, like, things should be, you know, locked in and rolling right now. They shouldn't be still figuring things out to that level where New Mexico just comes into your building and pushes you around and puts 50 points on the board. This is a team, New Mexico is also playing with a backup quarterback, third string.
Well, that guy was like Joe Montana, though.
He threw some really nice passes, and they were playing with the same wind conditions. They were, you know, it wasn't any easier for New Mexico, and they came in and they dominated from the. It probably should have been worse because New Mexico dominated the first quarter, and it was 0-0. Like, they didn't really start scoring until the second quarter, and then it was 15-0, and you were wondering, how is UNLV only down by 2 scores in this game? If UNLV can get a score before halftime, you know, they'll be in this game when they really shouldn't be. At that point, I think it was the first downs were like 14-0. Like, UNLV did not get a first down until the last drive of the first half, and they were still only down by, 15-0. And then the 2 touchdowns right before halftime by New Mexico really put the game away. And then the second half, you just saw UNLV sort of quit and roll over. And that's tough to handle. And then Sanchez sort of extended the performance with in the post game when he went after the team and sort of set the stage for this game at Utah State to be really a referendum on the entire season and maybe even on his coaching tenure. They have to show up against Utah State. I'm not saying they have to win, but after you play that way against New Mexico and after the way Tony Sanchez handled it in the post game, they have to respond or else you're probably going to lose the team for the season.
Yeah, and this was a game, you know, when the schedule came out, you're thinking to yourself, perfect. Start a league play at home, New Mexico. Bob Davey is, you know, hanging on by a thread over there as the head coach. New Mexico really doesn't have anything that UNLV can't counter. And I think a few things, not making excuses here, Case.
No, I'm calm down now. I got it out. It came quicker
than
I expected.
Got it out. We're taping a little earlier today. Case has got some extra energy.
I haven't had my morning, or maybe I did have my morning coffee. No, I don't drink coffee.
You have never had a sip of coffee?
I have maybe once, and it was just gross.
You're missing out. Do you drink coffee, Grimala?
Never.
Yes.
Well,
you're outnumbered with people.
Mind you,
I'm
speaking to two people that eat hamburgers with ketchup only.
Two self-described picky eaters.
Yeah. Not that I'm like way out there. But anyways, the week off hurt them, right? Or is that an excuse?
If anything, you would think that would help them because they had to make a change at quarterback, and you want those, you know, those extra practice reps for Max Gillum to get settled
in.
Dude,
he could have had a year's worth of practice reps. It wasn't going to make the difference. The man can't throw the ball. I mean, that's just what it is. Or at least he didn't show the ability to throw the ball against people running at him against New Mexico.
And it's I'm just speaking on your point about the extra time with the bye week. I don't see how it could have hurt them. It also allowed them to get healthy on the offensive line. Like, their offensive line, Tony Sanchez said, was as healthy as they've been all year going into this game. They were set. Like, everything was set for this game.
Do you think if Rodgers plays, it's obviously the outcome's different, but do you think that they have a chance to win?
Yes, because Rodgers can at least run the ball. Where he can't throw, but he can run and get you 150 yards that way. Whereas Gillum, the passing game was just as bad with him.
Is it Gillum or Gillian?
Gillum.
Gillum.
Two syllables.
So not like Arm in the Hammer, Gillian.
No, it's Max Gillum.
My fault on that. Again, too fired up, mispronouncing people's names.
No, it's fine.
No, I think everybody got it wrong at the beginning of the week when they made the move because no one's, you know, expected him to be in there. But so the passing game was not really... Didn't see any bump up with Gillum under center. And then you lost everything that Rodgers gave you in the running game. And I think because Rodgers' running threat wasn't there, the rest of the running game just never was able to click. Lexington Thomas only got 7 carries. Charles Williams only got a couple carries. Like
more than he'd gotten the week 2 weeks prior.
I think they only ran for, you know, less than 50 yards in the entire game. And UNLV's number, they came in number 6 in the country in rushing yards per game, and they got held – you know, to 50. It might be the lowest in the Sanchez in his 4 years. I'd have to go back and look at it. But they just got shut down in every aspect of offense. The receivers couldn't get open again. Running game wasn't there. Couldn't throw the ball.
I actually don't think those receivers are that good.
They're not.
They haven't had a good performance all year. They're going to have to go get a JC kid that could run vertically to catch a ball long. I mean – you should look this up. I know you're into numbers, Grimala.
Mm-hmm.
The longest pass play for UNLV this year.
Well, they had a long, I think I want to say it was 51 or 52 yards to Makai Stevenson for a touchdown against UTEP. And I think that's the longest, right? And then they had
Was it like a dump off that he ran 50
no, they,
yards?
No, they caught the safety creeping up to the line of scrimmage, and they threw it over his head, a deep ball for a touchdown, but they have not been able to connect on those deep balls. But they have a lot of deep ball type receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been impressed by their ability to get open or to break away from coverage. They've got one guy who I think has potential and promise to be like a playmaker. That's Tylee Collins. He's a freshman, and even he dropped a pass, an important pass on Saturday. So he's a freshman. You can't count on him that much. I don't know how refined he is as a route runner, but he's, you know, quick and strong, and he's good. The rest of the guys, I'm just not that impressed. Everyone, and people bring up Rodgers' inability to get the passing game going. I always make sure to like bring up, like, you also have to look at these receivers because I just don't think they get open that much, and that hurts him as well. So it's really the entire offense. The one thing they could always hang their hat on, though, was pushing people around in the offensive line and handing it to Lexington Thomas and him getting 6 yards a carry and moving the ball that way. And when he couldn't do that on Saturday, I think that led to just a complete collapse of the offense. And when even Lexington Thomas couldn't gain yards, that got Tony Sanchez himself really frustrated. And I think that's why he vented a little bit with his postgame comments and sort of let loose on Lex.
Mind you, they weren't playing Boise or San Diego State. They were playing New Mexico.
Yeah, certainly worth keeping in mind. I know the receivers were something we mentioned as a question mark, an area of concern going into the season. Maybe we didn't spend enough time with that because it's hard to disagree with Ray and Mike that they've been among the biggest problems on the roster. I did want to ask you a little bit more from being there for Coach Sanchez's post-game comments. To be honest, I know it's a stretch to find anything positive out of this game, but when I saw some of the quotes you were putting out on social media, I actually liked the way it seemed like Sanchez handled the loss. I just feel like when you lose that bad, you need to do something drastic. And if he thought the best way to get out of his team was challenging him like that, I'd been around some UNLV losses that I had covered in past seasons where I thought, to be honest, Tony Sanchez had handled the loss very poorly, and his post-game comments reflected that. I thought the tone was more fitting for what happened. What was it like being there?
Well, the thing is, when you lose like that, and the fans are obviously frustrated, and they want a pound of flesh, and they want the coach to come out and, you know, just yell and scream, and, you know, we played, he wants the coach to eviscerate himself and a team, and that's what you want because it's cathartic. But I just, from a coach, from a longer term view, calling out guy, like saying Lexington Thomas didn't run hard enough, our punt returner was pathetic for not catching for not stepping up and catching the ball, and going on and on like that, and calling people out by name and really putting it on the players. It feels good in the moment to say it, probably, for Tony Sanchez, and it feels good for the fans to hear it at that moment. But you've got another game in 6 days, and you need those players to respond and play hard for you. And when you're 2-3 and you haven't had a winning season in your coaching tenure, I think there's a real chance that you lose the team if you put those comments out there and then you don't play well the next week. There's a chance that everyone quits on the team and the season becomes a disaster where you win 2 or maybe 3 games and Reno blows you out in the last game of the season. And then Desiree Francois has to make a coaching decision in the offseason when, you know, 2 weeks ago you would have said that's unthinkable because this team we had pegged for 7 wins and things were looking up. And I just think that you bring when you go after the team like that and really put it on them and turn this next game into a referendum on your entire coaching tenure, it introduces a level of extremity that you really didn't need. Like, you didn't need to make this you didn't need to make this an either or. We're either going to respond or I'm going to get fired after the season. You didn't need to make it like a 50-50 black and white proposition, but I feel like it kind of is now.
Well, glad we touched on this. That's a very interesting perspective. I think you make some really good points there, and especially I don't think you want to make a referendum on your whole coaching, on the whole season going into a game against Utah State, who has been on fire, looks like one of the best teams in the Mountain West, just destroys BYU last week. I will say I totally see where it's playing with fire. I usually think, you know, I hope there was some calculation to it and, you know, it wasn't just him going off the rails. You know, because I do leave it to a coach to compute, you know, how a team will respond. Maybe he thinks his guys, you know, are tougher than they've shown out there and they'll be able to answer his challenge. It's certainly a thing that will be extremely interesting to watch. And I think it's a big story right now, so I'd like to linger on it for a second. We'll go to Ray, because the biggest Tony Sanchez supporter there is. I think he already made a snide Bob Davie comment. Yeah, Bob Davie, I think, has a better record at New Mexico than Tony Sanchez at UNLV. So, Ray, did you like Tony's comments, or do you agree with Mike? Where do you see it right now?
I think the important thing is that, you know, his back's against the wall, and throughout his 4-year tenure, he's tried many things to motivate the players. Don't know if we've quite seen this yet. So it's a new approach. He clearly had a wild stew on this because the outcome pretty much was decided the last, hour and a half of the game in real time. So I think it was more calculated than it may have appeared. He probably picked players to call out who were his guys that have been here for a while that he knew were going to react to that.
But Lexington Thomas is a senior captain for the team. So that's a guy that you would believe that everyone sort of respects and looks up to and has his pulse on the rest of the team. So there may be something to be like selectively, you know, picking him out of the entire group when no one played well. So there may be something to that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not the result you wanted, obviously. You know, you look at Sanchez's contract, and Mike and I, we were talking about this earlier offline. He's on through 2021. That means 19, 20, and 21. We know UNLV's financial restraints, where there's just not enough money to pay Tony and his coaches to leave and bring somebody else in. However, I didn't think that they would lose like this to New Mexico. And if Case is right, and if this thing goes off the tracks and there are no shows against Reno and they get beat at home, that's going to be very interesting. Are you going to have 750? I think we said it was. Was I talking to you about the whatever Tony's owed to get rid of Tony? I mean, they're still paying CDR, correct?
I'd have to look it up.
I think he gets paid through 19. And of course, they've got the complex that Tony raised money for that is still missing $8 or $9 million. You're about to move into the new stadium. You'd like to have some fans go there to watch them play. So there's a lot of variables to measure with Sanchez. I mean, he's done some good things. Everybody admits it or sees it. The problem is none of that is translating on Saturdays, right? The best win he had was year one. They went into Reno and they beat Reno there, right? Mm-hmm. Do we agree on that?
Certainly. I think that's
and I can't even find the second best one.
At Fresno State last year. With a backup quarterback. They went in and won that game.
With Stanton?
Yes.
Well,
on Halloween.
He's John Elway.
That's right. If it wasn't for the rivalry, that should probably be number one. But I think with the rivalry, you'd go Reno number one.
Yeah, in terms of like point spread or whatever, it's probably the Fresno State game where they most outperformed expectations. But that Reno one was the one that got the fan base fired up. Yeah, yeah, it got people excited.
I mean, I've been in this city my whole life. You guys know that, 42 years. And there's been a lot of these disappointing nights as a UNLV, somebody who follows the team, right? I was there. Hauk had the losses against Southern Utah, Northern Arizona, right? Barely beat Northern Colorado. Sanford had just some moments. Jeff Horton in 96 had the worst team in America, basically. It's just been a, you know, Jim Strong's teams under – when you try to build something, which UNLV is always going to be building, right? You're going to
hope not. You hope at some point the building is done.
Yeah, but tradition-wise, they can't get over the hump. And when you're not used to winning, when you're traditionally a losing program record-wise, it's tough to change your colors, right?
And it's certainly more difficult.
Yeah, and we're seeing this right now where the Rebels were favored by 10, give or take, right? Everybody thought they were going to win, and the players didn't show up. This is a team that has to show up every day. There's none of this, oh, we're lining up against the, you know, poor sisters of the poor, right? Or whatever that saying is.
I like the little poor sisters of the poor.
Little sisters of the poor, or whatever it is. And we're going to get in player 105 here in the third quarter. That they haven't reached that level. They're not Alabama. You know what I'm saying? And they clearly didn't bring it, and this is the result. And I don't know how Sanchez gets them motivated to play, but it's clearly on him. The one thing we haven't talked about is Gillum our guy going forward? So he's got about another 4 or 5 games, depending on how you look at those toe x-rays from Armani. Do you burn Oblad's red shirt? Now, he's able to play 4 games and still keep that red shirt. Do you try to get him in there these next 4 weeks and hope that that's my wife texting. Apparently Nicholas got 100% on his reading test today.
Congratulations.
So do you have Kenyon play these next 4 days and games and hope Rogers comes back and still get him?
Well, your next game at Utah State, if it were up to me, I know coaches don't think this way, but that game is probably a loss no matter who you start at quarterback, even if Rogers was healthy. I would throw Gilliam to the Wolves against Utah State. And who knows, maybe he after with a game of real against a real-life defense, he improves, shows you a little something at Utah State. Now, you know, probably not going to win, probably not even going to come close, but maybe he shows you a little something. And if not, you know, you still play him the whole game, and then you give Oblad another week in practice as the number two with number two reps. And then after that, the schedule eases up. You've got, after Utah State, you come home to play Air Force. Then you go to San Jose State. Those are 2 games you can win. At that point, I would probably, if Gillum doesn't show anything against Utah State, I would go to Oblad at that point.
We talk about Oblad like he's like gonna, you know, like he's a 5-star recruit.
He's not. He's got the best arm of anyone left. He's not going to give you anything on the ground, and he's not the most accurate guy. He's a true freshman. Like, he may be an accurate passer one day.
He's an 18-year-old kid. You're pinning your hopes on an 18-year-old.
I think it's certainly worth, especially this is the first year of the new redshirt rules, correct? So yeah. There's a little bit more leeway of how much he can play. I think you just certainly want to get a look at what he can do. I know Ray and I both have seen him a lot in game action in high school, and I always was intrigued by his potential. I mean, he does some really good things. You always felt like he'd need a couple years to build it, but I mean, for as much as hinges on this season and as much as everyone was pinning their hopes on making a bowl game, if Gillum has another game like he did on Saturday, I think you just got to at least see, is there any chance that Oblad is an upgrade?
And I'm just saying from a math standpoint, if you give Gillum another week, that's 2 weeks of Gillum, then Oblad's got four games,
and then
and
Rogers
that gets you to
back.
Rogers, and you still maintain Oblad's red shirt at that point. If he only plays in those four games, mm-hmm. and then Rogers plays the final two, including the Reno game, and that's probably your best-case scenario.
You see that? That's smart thinking.
How so?
I wasn't disagreeing. I was just saying we needed to see him at some point. I'm not making the anti Kenyon Oblad stance.
Yeah. Well,
I'm in total agreement.
It just amazes me. You know, I cover high school football. I think I've got a good grasp on recruiting, not only locally but nationally. And it just amazes me that here's a kid who was a four-star recruit initially, was at Cal Berkeley, went to JC and was serviceable. I read your great story online last week. Those videos were beautiful. Kid couldn't complete a pass, and it wasn't even close. I mean, it wasn't like the receivers were having a bad day or the wind was – oh, I guess maybe you could say the wind was a semi-factor. But there was like the first half they had 8 yards in the first 38 minutes or something.
Well, he's a kid. He's not a – A-plus athlete like an Armani Rogers. He gets by on his feel for the position and placing the ball and, you know, doing those sort of intangible things. But the arm strength is like he's not there. He's not capable of throwing. He's very limited. There are just a lot of passes that he can't throw, and you really can't even ask him to attempt. So that just makes you limited, and then sort of everything went wrong against New Mexico. I would put a lot of that on Gillum, but not all of it on Gillum. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he just can't do that the coaches are going to have to coach around, and you've got to scheme around it and sort of play to his strengths when you find what they are and sort of stay away from his weaknesses. So I do put a lot of it on Gillum. There were some passes that should have been completed that he couldn't get there, but some, not all of it on Gillum.
Yeah, very interesting, very interesting. I if you would have talked to me last week, despite my confidence, if you would have said, hey, the Rebels are going to lose this game, I'd say, okay, you know what? It's going to come down to the end. Maybe they blow it, whatever. Never in my wildest imaginations would I've seen or pictured or whatever the correct term is, 50-14, and the crud offensive effort.
And I think that goes for the coaches too, and that's probably why we saw Tony Sanchez, you know, let loose on the team after the game, because, I mean, I'm sure he didn't expect that sort of thing. And the thing I would caution about is, yeah, things looked horrible in that game. They're probably going to be horrible against Utah State, and it's going to look like the end of the world. But you look at the schedule, and after that, you've got Air Force at home at San Jose State. So if you just keep this team together for another week, there's a chance, you know, and then you play two good games. There's a chance you could be back to 4-4. Like, Air Force is not a gimme. That's a game they're going to have to play really well to win.
Air Force just smacked Navy around. I mean, smacked Navy.
That's a game. Really bad Navy team. I would pick UNLV to win that
UNLV
game right now.
UNLV hasn't smacked anything.
They smacked UTEP around, and I called out that UTEP was terrible, and you chastised me for only play the games on your schedule.
So I'm just saying, like, that
can we get UTEP tomorrow?
I just don't – UNLV's not outmatched against Air Force. That's a game that they should win even after what happened.
So with
Saturday.
Those two games back-to-back, Air Force and San Jose State, things are not – it's the season is not over. So that's why I was sort of taken aback by Tony Sanchez sort of laying into his team as if the season was over, because – it's not. Like, you can, even with a backup quarterback, if you play well, you can win those two games. And you, then all of a sudden, you're 4-4. You just got to look ahead a little bit, and you can still be 4-4 with four games left to play, and Armani Rogers set to play in two of those games. And, yeah, the schedule gets harder for those final four games, but you could still be right there, even with this horrible loss to New Mexico.
Let me ask you this. So they go with and we'll learn later today who they're going to start next Saturday at Utah State, where they're like 83-point underdogs.
Only 24.5.
Same thing. Anything over three touchdowns means you don't have a prayer. So say they go with your great theory, Grimala. Gillum this week, let him get beat up, but he's got to finish it out, even if you put Grayson in over Oblad, right? And then...
Forgot Grayson was part of the
discussion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Then You give KO the Rock, Air Force, San Jose, dub. Say the kid goes 3-1 before Rodgers comes back. Now do you shift gears? Because remember, Rodgers wasn't exactly throwing the ball. And also, KO can't run the ball like Rodgers, doesn't like contact, and the receivers are going to have to make plays. Either way, too much analysis.
It's Air Force, San Jose, and then Fresno and San Diego State. So if you get back to 4-4, then you're probably looking at 4-6. I was just projecting out. And then your final two games, which Rodgers could be back for. The timeline is still murky. They said around 6 weeks. They said it could be more, it could be less. But let's assume it's 6 weeks. Oblad gives you those four games and maybe goes 2-2 because the schedule is weak for those two games. Your final two games that you would have to win with Armani Rodgers coming back, at Hawaii and then home against Reno. Those are two games that UNLV probably won't be favored in, but you have a chance. And that's
having to win that game is going to define whether could define because Reno can't stop a cold, right? But did Reno win on Saturday?
No,
they lost.
Okay,
I think it was 20-3 or something like that.
Yeah, oh, they only scored 3 points.
Yeah, their offense did not get off. Wow. Fresno State's defense pretty impressive.
So
the air raid only got a field goal.
So
21-3.
21. I mean, they were giving up 21 every. Either way,
just to go. I just don't want to keep harping on it, but that was. I just want the season. It could still come down to that Reno game if things go well. So that's why I don't know why Tony Sanchez would make like it could come down to Reno, but because of the way he's approaching it, it's now coming down to Utah State. Like he's moved that, like that Judgment Day is gone. He's moved it from the last game of the season to 6 days from now, which it seems like he didn't have to, but that's the way he feels like he needs to get his team going. So
I think at this rate, I actually wouldn't it be a win if I wanted you to elaborate a little, Brewer. Why do you not want it to come down to the Reno game? Wouldn't that be a win if everything was coming down to that? I mean, we've talked about how important it is to get to a bowl this season,
how important it is
to get progress. Considering, and that's the biggest game of the year.
Considering what happened on Saturday, if they're 5-6 going into Reno at home, that's phenomenal. I just hate how it potentially could come down to that.
If it does come down to that, though, then that means UNLV has got some kind of momentum and they've salvaged their season. And if UNLV's 5-6 going into that final game, they'll be feeling pretty good about themselves. Like, there's no scenario where they're 5-6 and they're saying, oh, man, I can't believe it's come down to this. Mm-hmm. How did we let it happen? No, if they're 5-6 at that point, they'll be saying, we held it together without Armani. Now he's back. We just beat Hawaii. We're rolling. Like, no one can stop us now. And they'll be feeling pretty good about that game if they can manage to get there. But it's going to take, like, a lot of maneuvering. It's going to take really good coaching.
Yeah. Well, so here's what – if you look at the schedule, I mean, it's clear cut. There's three games they have no prayer in, Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State. There's four games in which they have a chance to win. May be favored, may not be winnable games. Air Force, San Jose, Hawaii, Reno. So the question is do you win out in those games you should be competitive in?
Just, I mean, statistically, you lose one of those. I'm not ready to give him 4-0. I also will say that while I don't expect him to win any of those other three games, I wouldn't be surprised if they showed something in one of those and made it a close game. We already mentioned the Fresno State win last year, which was out of nowhere. Certainly not expecting them to win any, but I think all year we've been saying 6-6 was the most likely finish. I think after what we saw on Saturday, you'd have to say 5-7 or even 4-8 is more likely than 6-6 at this point. Not to say they can't get there, but if you're calculating it out, I think that's probably where you would land.
Yeah, something in the neighborhood of 4 wins. And they've, I mean, 6 wins would be an absolute like miracle at this point, and you'd have to consider that a great success. But, I mean, just the way that last game went down, you've also now introduced the element of the possibility of 2-10. Like, the losing out is not beyond the realm of possibility at this point, and that would just be a major disaster. So it's basically the possibilities, you've got the entire spectrum now. You can be 2-10, or you could be playing in a bowl game. Like, I think everything is still on the table, some more likely than others. But after what we saw on Saturday, there is no way of telling which way this season is going to go.
Well, before we finish the show, I think to narrow the focus a little bit, since we've looked overall at what's going to happen, we've talked about how much importance Tony Sanchez has put on this Utah State game. Just what are our expectations going into that game? I honestly, you know, I feel like Utah State has looked like such world beaters. They're due to come down to earth a little bit. I think UNLV is going to be motivated for this game. I think they're going to have a good week of practice. I got to think they... I'm going to say my prediction right now. They stay within the number. They make it competitive, and Tony Sanchez kind of backtracks, says he likes his team's effort in Logan and is excited for the rest of the season. I'm going to say something like a two-touchdown loss. What are you guys' expectations after, you know, so much significance is put in this game, as you described, Mike?
I just think they need to get a lot more than they got from Max Gillum in order to keep that game close on the road. I don't see it. Like, if he's not completing passes, then the running game just is completely choked out, and they live on their running game. If they're not averaging 6 yards a carry, they're not going anywhere. And I don't know if Gillum allows that to happen. So I think you're probably looking at another, like, 3 points, 10 points, single digits in play. I don't think they're going to score enough to keep it close.
I mean, if that happens, and certainly that's a very big possibility, but where does that leave... You know, talk about painting yourself into a corner. You've been describing how much significance Tony Sanchez put on this game. What do you say if you go out there and lose 42-10 or something?
Then you throw the life preserver of we're changing quarterbacks, which always, you know, that buys you some time. Because then, you know, even the players in the locker room want to say, hey, let's see what we got with this new kid. He's a freshman, but we know he's got a big arm. Let's see what happens. And then if Oblad goes out and you get destroyed by Air Force in that first game, then it's probably over. Everyone's jumping ship. They're all sort of just, you know, looking ahead to, you know, the end of the season and that sort of thing. But you can always buy yourself another week by, you know, changing quarterbacks, and this is the next great hope. So that's what I would expect. I would expect them to start Gillum this week at Utah State. If it's another beating, then they'll make a move to Oblad. That's what I would expect.
Love it. Grimala's got it all mapped out. are you in agreement, Brewer? You see that?
Grimala has been so precise on his analysis today. I can't add anything to it.
All right. Well, there you have it. We'll be back next week to break down the game at Utah State, which it sounds like Mike is expecting to be a blowout. I'm thinking it's going to be a little closer, but UNLV certainly loses. Hard to go against Grimala when Brewer just gave him the precise tag. We'll see how it goes. For Ray and Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to The Rebel Room.